RCR with Paul Brennan, Reality Check Radio.
So here's the question. Can PCR tests be abused to generate the appearance of an outbreak or pandemic? And we're thinking about this, well, we've already thought about this, but right now we're thinking about this in the light of current claims of a bird flu outbreak in Otago. Coming on to RCR to, well, educate us a bit on PCR, etc., is Dr. Mark Bailey, who is the husband of Dr. Sam Bailey. I mention that because the two are well known together, and they've been on this channel before with Pete Williams. But Mark is joining us first time for our breakfast program. Hi, Mark. Thanks for coming in.
Paul, thank you for the invitation. And yeah, I look forward to this chat to hopefully settle some mythology going around.
Yeah, first up, we've only got their word to take, haven't we, on whether there is actually an outbreak of something or not.
Yeah, exactly. And although this is relatively new for New Zealand, it's certainly not new for the rest of the world. This so-called bird flu has, you know, been run before, if we want to put it that way, in Europe and North America many times. In fact, for the last two or three decades. So, yeah, the question becomes, you know, what are they actually talking about when they talk about the bird flu? Because most people assume that it's an influenza-like illness that has been picked up by the birds, is maybe going to humans sometimes or the other way around. And all of the stuff is actually complete fallacy. It's got no basis in scientific reality at all. So, yeah, the current situation you refer to is one of these huge poultry farms in the South Island. And yeah, I mean, I had a quick look at the situation, and this is one of these setups where they have 40,000 birds in each shed, apparently, and 160,000 birds on site. Wow, so okay. There's plenty of reasons when you've got that many birds together why they might get sick. And
you don't have to be a rocket scientist, because I said that yesterday morning. You know, isn't that what you get when you get all those birds close together? Imagine all those humans close together. You can get anything go through in that situation, can't you?
Exactly right. And you see the information that we've been provided through the press releases. It's actually very sketchy because they're saying that, you know, oh, there's been some sudden deaths in the birds. Some of the birds are a bit listless. Some of the birds have more diarrhea than normal, because as you know, birds do tend to have runny poo, but more runny than normal. So, you know, you have these situations when you have and birds by nature are very fickle. I mean, everyone knows this who looks after birds and keeps birds, that they do tend to get sick quite easily.
And die.
And die.
I've had the whole four chickens die within weeks of each other at about age three.
Yeah, yeah. We have a small block and we have chickens, and they, most of the time, they are beautifully healthy and laying eggs every day. And once in a while, one will just drop dead all of a sudden. And, yeah. You know, my father was a veterinarian, and he taught us growing up that compared to other animals, birds are notoriously difficult to diagnose what's caused their demise.
Oh, okay, that's
their
interesting.
Death. Yeah, and owners used to bring in their birds to my dad sometimes and maybe push for an autopsy or something, and he just explained to them it's extremely difficult to work out why birds die. And even as a kid, I tried to rescue a couple with my dad's help. It didn't used to work out very well.
They did tend to die on you, right? You put them in a little box and think, okay, I'll release them in the morning, and they're dead in the morning.
Exactly.
So I'm just trying to imagine the scene. MPI is or the farm is testing, I believe that's how it went, and they're using, well, do we know what test they're using?
Well, not really. We will presume they're using PCR again, because I saw the email that your team copied me into that they'd sent to the New Zealand agencies, MPI, etc., to try and find out some details, just some basic questions about which test are they using, how was it validated, etc. And all we got back, or all your team received back, was a generic press release that gave us no information about exactly what tests they were using. So we'll have to presume it's PCR.
Wait on, why wouldn't you actually tell us?
I think Paul, because of what happened during the COVID shenanigans, when they did provide us information about the test they were using and we could access the laboratory information, everyone could see that they weren't diagnostic tools.
And that's what the inventor, Carrie Mullis, I think he pointed that out. He's dead now, but he pointed that out, not for diagnosis at all.
Correct. People ask, well, what is the sensitivity? What is the specificity of PCR tests? Well, one, it depends which one you're talking about. And two, it actually depends whether you're talking about the laboratory performance, which is what we call the analytical specificity and sensitivity, versus the clinical or diagnostic sensitivity and specificity, because they're quite different things. So you can have a PCR that's incredibly accurate at picking up certain genetic sequences from samples, but that doesn't mean anything. It doesn't mean, as Carrie Mullis explained all those years ago, it doesn't mean you've identified the reason an organism such as a chicken or a human got sick. But unfortunately, this has got worse and worse because, you know, PCR is relatively new in the sense of being widespread for human and animal use. So going back 20 years ago, PCR was incredibly expensive and was not generally rolled out in virtually any circumstances. Now, when I was a medical doctor in the system in 1999 through to 2016, we virtually never used it. It started to come into use in later years for purported influenza virus, but apart from that, it was very, very rarely used. And I think the public the public's been swindled because they've been sold something which is being advertised as a diagnostic test, even though the manufacturers themselves will admit that this is not usually the case. And they usually have disclaimers about using it in the diagnostic setting.
Yeah, and then it creates a space to kind of use that. There's some wiggle room in there to sound plausible scientifically when you're declaring potential bird flu epidemic. So there may not be one, but yet we can have one because we've got the PCR test.
Correct. And this is what we've been writing about for years. And my wife, Sam, she was a co-author of Virus Mania, which was first published in 2007. And it warned in 2007 that these so-called epidemics and pandemics would just keep getting bigger, not because of any biological event, not because of viruses or so-called pathogens, but simply because they had more testing rolling out. And wherever they roll out the tests, they find their cases. So we don't have any evidence of, this was the same with COVID-19, obviously. There's no evidence of new disease. There's just evidence of a new test, which is not a suitable diagnostic tool, which is rolled out en masse. Same thing happening in these poultry farms. Now, a couple of decades ago, a poultry farm in New Zealand, if there were some chickens dying or getting sick, even if there were significant numbers of them, there were no PCR tests available for them. So there could be no bird flu, quote, outbreak.
Yeah.
But now that we have them, we predicted this and have been warning about it for a few years now, that it will eventually come to New Zealand because this has been going on. The culling of flocks in North America and Europe is hundreds of millions of birds have been killed. Now, if you look up the information on this, it might say something along the lines of, oh, the Dutch bird flu outbreak in 2003 killed so many birds, etc. Now, almost all of those birds were exterminated by humans. They weren't sick.
It's like being counted as a COVID death after you've been shot in the driveway.
Correct. Yeah. You just add it to the numbers. You do a PCR and, well, or don't do a PCR and just add it to the numbers. So, and this is what goes on. So with this situation in this poultry farm in New Zealand, so they sound like they're planning to kill two of the sheds, which is a total of 80,000 birds. And then these will be chalked up as bird flu victims when in fact there's no evidence that any of them had a new entity. And they're mainly birds which are not showing any symptoms are going to be slaughtered. And their argument would be, they're trying to stop the spread. And we see this in their press releases and the news stories saying that they've got to act quickly to stop the spread. It is absolute complete nonsense. If they stop the PCR tests, they'll stop the spread.
Yeah, the you're mentioning those communications we've been having with them, part of that included an explanation of, you know, the, what do they call them, the stakeholders, talking with the overseas partners and things like that to reassure them and to show that we've eliminated it. It just sounds to me like some kind of performance or dance. So you've got to be able to say, well, we've done this, 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 and the other thing. It's meaningless, but they've got to kind of telegraph that. Does anyone really care? This is the other thing I'm wondering.
Yeah, I agree with you. I mean, watching, I don't usually watch the mainstream news, but when the reality check team asked if I'd come on for an interview, I thought I'd have a look at what the mainstream was saying and turned on a couple of newspapers. Yep. And yeah, I mean, it's like something out of a movie, isn't it? We've got these MPI officials and veterinarians and the biosecurity people. They're showing us aerial shots of things. They're in a some
just
sort
like
of
Australia, same thing, yeah. Chopper shot. They're all in there. Here we go. They're all in there. The gear, right?
It all looks pretty credible and stuff. And that, and look, Paul, I'll be clear. I don't. I'm not saying that those people know it's a scam. I'm sure the veterinarians and the other officials that are involved, they think it's real, and they probably think that they're doing something
saving,
useful.
Yeah, saving the world. Yeah.
Exactly. And I think we should also keep in mind that some people might be scratching their heads and saying, well, why would the farm agree to lose or cull 80,000 birds?
Maybe there's compensation.
And
you pay
is.
For the use of the stage props.
And if we look at the Biosecurity Act in New Zealand, we will see there is provision for compensation for participants in this kind of scam. So the reason they agree, these farms, to do this sort of thing is that, yeah, they will be compensated for it. So it's not like they're losing money necessarily.
Yeah.
And I don't speak to know exactly of what kind of compensation they get. I can just say that the Legislative Act
the
does provide for compensation.
Yeah, okay. So just quickly back to the PCR. So just as I understand it, and we've had it explained to us before, but this is a process where it's like a magnification made of a sample, and it can show what elements, depending on the amount of, and you can explain the dialing up, but, you know, you can get it to the point where you can reveal one fragment of a bit of genetics, you know, and even that, I guess you could seize on to. So in terms of how it looks for things, and then there's the question, you've probably got something to say about viruses. Is it even a virus?
Yeah, so you're correct. The PCR it's a manufacturing technique. It amplifies genetic sequences, and it's extremely powerful. It can pick up, you know, a single molecule in a sample and then amplify it up to something where we can really see it. And I think what gets lost is people don't seem to appreciate the problems that come with that. Like, you know, it would be anything. When you get down to such minuscule amounts, you have to ask, well, what is the significance of that?
Yeah.
The process doesn't tell us about the provenance. It doesn't tell us where the genetic sequences originally came from, whether they came from the organism being tested, whether they just came from contamination.
Well, they say that wild birds.
Yeah, I saw their story, and they featured a wild bird flying over top of the poultry farm.
So like a generic or something photoshopped, eh?
They said, well, that may explain things. You know, we've got birds flying overhead. And, I mean, this is just absolutely comical. And their advice, you know, to stop your chickens at home mixing with wild birds and all this kind of nonsense. But anyway, yeah, that's their wild speculations. But coming back to the PCR, it's certainly not a clinical diagnostic tool. And I mean, if people want to understand that from the COVID era, you could take COVID-19 PCRs and you could test them on inanimate objects. So
yeah, I've heard of cars coming up positive, like a BMW car.
Correct. So, and again, you may be picking up these sequences that may not be the issue, but the issue is, what is the significance of picking up those sequences? So that is the problem. Now, at high amplification, you get another problem. So at 34 to 35 cycles, if that's the threshold at which the PCR...
And that's a doubling of every cycle. So people can do the math on that. It ends up massive numbers, right?
Yes. So if the threshold, so that's the point at which the process is picking up a positive, if you're up to 34, 35 cycles at the threshold, that means there was one molecule to start with. And with most PCR processes.
Well, so you're looking at the electrons spinning around the atom almost.
Yeah, you're getting into the realm of, you know, something that's very difficult for humans to comprehend. So we have to keep that in mind. So once, if your threshold, if your something's testing positive in the mid to high 30s, 40, etc., if that's the threshold, it probably means that nothing was actually in the original sample. The process itself is generating a positive result. So that is problematic. And that's why it's important to know exactly what their testing protocols are. And I can tell you, Paul, every time they disclose their testing protocols to us, we can just dissect it straight away and point out why it's completely fallacious. And perhaps that's why this time they're sort of keeping it a bit hush-hush about which PCR they're using and won't share any details.
Yeah, but not telling us. This is the thing. I don't know what they're thinking. Not telling us is telling us everything at this stage. So it's a dumb move.
Yeah, but I think they know that they need to sell a narrative and they need to get most people to believe it, and they don't want to provide any extra information where people can start criticising what they're doing and showing that there's absolutely no basis to the whole claim that there's some sort of new outbreak, or that something has come to New Zealand, or that something's going to spread into the human population. Because, yeah, and I got...
Well, they're playing that down. They're saying there's no... You know, experts say that this is not contagious to mammals.
Yeah, and none of them ever are, because this is another one of the myths that needs to be dispelled. So when they classify influenza, you'll see they'll have an H and an N. The H stands for hemagglutinin, which is a glycoprotein or a class of glycoproteins, and neuraminidase, which is a type of enzyme that's found in lots of animals. So these are not specific to... They're trying to claim that these H and N proteins are specific to influenza viruses. And that's, you know, H5N1 is the big one. And they've been saying if that comes to New Zealand, oh my goodness, you know, they... Back in 2005, they in Europe, for instance, they said that H5N1 was poised to kill 150 million humans if it jumped out of the...
150, I mean, half the population of Europe. Okay.
Exactly. This is the kind of nonsense that they espouse. Now, they're saying with the current one that they're detecting in New Zealand, they're saying, yeah, like you say, well, this is not a dangerous one for humans. But the warning is that, you know, some of them might be. Yeah. But again, none of this has any basis in scientific reality. What they do is they go around detecting genetic sequences. They go around detecting these proteins, etc. If what we did and what others have done is go back to the original studies, which is what you have to do. Now, some of them are from last century, and particularly the genetic stuff started becoming more detailed from the 1980s onwards. And we went back and had a look at all their pivotal papers for so-called coronaviruses and so-called influenza viruses to work out what is the basis. How did they come up with these genetic codes, which subsequently became used for developing these PCR tests? And what we found is shocking, is that they never found contagious entities. They never found anything that met the definition of a virus. What they had was various cell culture experiments. They had various environmental samples where they assumed... They just made one big assumption after another and said, well, this is probably comes from a virus. And then, you know, someone published a paper or put the sequences on a genetic database. And that's the world we live in now, where there's so much.
Well, it's like a kind of form of laundering information, isn't it?
Yeah, well, it's just... I mean, a certain amount of it will be known deception because of the amount of money that the vested interest in the genomics industry, the PCR industry, virology, the broader pandemic industry, which everyone had a good view of during the COVID era, of how certain groups can make huge amounts of money by putting these narratives forward. And I mean, I did my own calculations in New Zealand, and everyone realizes that the amount of transfer of money that goes on during fake pandemics is huge. But PCR is a massive element. So I think in New Zealand, by 2021 or 2022, the spending on PCR had hit $1 billion.
Oh, man. And it's a country
outside. I mean, we're a small country. Yeah. Now, think about that. Imagine if you had a product that was selling like that. You'd certainly be interested in maintaining the narrative.
Yeah. Just thinking, we had a chat with Gary Moller a while back, and that was on, you know, osteoporosis. And the reason I mention this is it's got the same kind of pattern. So you would have a bone density scan. Most of the time it would reveal enough for the diagnostic part to say, oh, your bones are kind of crumbling. You know, the density's down. So therefore, you get put on medication, I don't know, calcium or whatever, to fix that. But it actually made it worse. So more people were, they became so brittle. You see how that works, right? I mean, the PCR test is the equivalent to the scanner, which is the on-ramp to the diagnosis, which is the on-ramp to the medication. You know, it's the same model.
Exactly. And look, I worked inside the allopathic medical system for 2 decades. And for several years, I was also a clinical trials physician. So, you know, supervising trials that were funded by Big Pharma, etc. And yes, essentially, that's what the public probably, it's hard for them to understand sometimes, to appreciate that it's just business models. It's nothing to do with health necessarily. And yeah, Gary's correct. The whole osteoporosis thing, that's another scam that the medico pharmaceutical industry runs where, yeah, invent a test. Purportedly, you know, it's got some diagnostic abilities.
It's high tech. It's a scanner. So that sounds good. You know, the machines to go ping. That was Monty Python, wasn't it? I mean, yeah. So yeah, that ticks that box for confidence.
And the whole medico-pharmaceutical apparatus and the wider pandemic industry and the partners that are involved in that and the beneficiaries, they all know this. You can't make money unless you've got customers. And the way you create customers is through cases. Mm. And the way you create cases is through tests. And there's a wider discussion, and we probably have to come back to talk about that, about diagnostic testing, particularly in the medical system, and what it can't do and what it's people think it can do. And they're being classified with all kinds of what they think are specific diseases, and then they're being put and funneled into these various things. But yeah, we have the same situation going on at this poultry farm, and we see this in farming in general, whether it's chicken or cows or sheep, is that the way they create these quote outbreaks is by just rolling out these tests. That's how you do it.
Coming up against time, though, what happens if, I mean, do they go and test all the other chicken sheds in the country? That would be a logical thing to do on the back of one, because people start to ask questions, well, are there others? You find more. The exports have been paused for now. At what point? What point are you screwed your whole industry? Or if it's kind of performative, you only let it get to a certain number of diagnosis or cases or whatever you call them, of chicken cases, and you want to lock it off there because otherwise the consequences could spin out of control. So it'll be interesting to see if there are any more findings, right?
Yeah, and look, we were obviously outspoken about this during 2020 with the COVID situation, where the cases would go up and down depending on how much testing the government authorities decided to do. So that does come into it. They might elect to slow down testing or speeding it up. And when you do either, you'll get a change in the apparent number of cases. But I think also we have to keep in mind that, I think in case their listeners are not clear, these birds at this facility, apparently they're called free range with 40,000 birds.
Yeah, how can that be free range? Well, they've got a 10-cent piece space to themselves.
And I don't think people would think that that's very free range. These are also birds that are being given vaccines and antibiotics. So this is not...
Well, that comes into it too.
Yeah. This is not organic farming. And, you know, when I first heard the story and they said that this was a free-range facility, I thought, oh, that's interesting. And then I looked into it and looked at the facility and I realized it was one of these, again, it's one of these labels where their terminology...
But how can you say that?
Well, this is quite common within the industry because free range just means apparently with birds that they have an opportunity to go outside sometimes. It doesn't have anything to do with how
once
many
in their
there
life.
Are. Yeah, and the fact that they're being given regular pharmaceuticals. And I know some of the New Zealand farms, they pride themselves, Paul, because they only get half the number of vaccines as chickens overseas.
Oh, okay.
Apparently that's an indication that they're doing better, these chickens. But, I mean, as you know, those of us that run our own chickens, we never give them vaccines or antibiotics. They don't need any of that nonsense. And that they're true free-range chickens. So, yeah, I think that's something to take into account with the story is to have a look and say that these are probably not good eggs to be buying anyway.
Any final things to say that we might have missed, Mark?
Look, Paul, there's so much stuff to cover here, and I'd advise people to have a look at our website, drsambailey.com. We've covered the bird flu, we've covered COVID, we've covered just about every major, quote, epidemic that people could think of, just showing why there's nothing to be scared of, why people and animals get sick for other reasons, and why you need to just ignore these crazy headlines and claims that there's outbreaks poised to happen or are happening, etc. Because it's all fear-based narratives that have nothing to do with true health and true biology.
Dr. Mark Bailey, thanks for coming on RCR. Nice to have you.
Thank you, Paul.
The RCR shop has great gift ideas, from great-looking tees, hoodies, caps, tote bags, bumper stickers, and more. The RCR shop is now open at www.realitycheck.radio/shop.